Mike Lofgren is the author of the book called The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. Mike Lofgren knows a few things about the workings of the state. He spent 28 years as a congressional staffer, including 16 years as a senior analyst for the House and Senate budget committees. His tenure in that position gave him an unobstructive view of the budgetary process on the Iraq War, among other major issues. His earlier book, The Party Is Over, sold a lot of copies and got him interviews with Bill Moyers and Chris Matthews, to name a few. Mike Lofgren, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. You make it clear Bill Moyers had a lot to do with the birth of this project. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was thinking about writing something like that, and he offered to post an essay that I would write, and I did, and it turned into the interview, and then it turned into the book. The book is basically the interview with Bill Moyers on steroids.
The subtitle may be of more concern than the title, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. The Fall of the Constitution seems like a strong term.
Well, it does, but over 200 years ago, James Madison told us that a country in perpetual state of war is going to have a very hard time maintaining its liberties. And as we've seen with this war on terrorism, this thing has gone on for 14 years. By comparison, World War II, from Pearl Harbor to VJ Day, was like 3 years and 9 months. This thing has gone on so long, it's created all kinds of adverse institutional incentives to keep it going on, because that's how the contractors buy the Cheerios for their kids.
Okay, we'll pick up the thought.
And build their McMansions.
All right, we'll pick up the thread on the other side of a short break. The Deep State is Mike Lofgren's book. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Lofgren and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is former congressional staffer Mike Lofgren. He's written a book called The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. And he lays out what he saw inside the whole process in 28 years as a congressional staffer, including 16 as a senior budget analyst for budget committees in the House and Senate. Join us on the Exchange with your questions and comments about shadow governments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Mike, you write about the changes that your career produced in you. I mean, you said you started as a Reagan Republican. Where'd you end up?
I end up basically firmly non-ideological. I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. My view is that ideologies, if you use them as a substitute for thinking, you're basically lobotomizing yourself. The solutions to our problems in this country do not lie with some rigid template of following one party or the other. There's has to be a pragmatic solution.
Pragmatism was the word I was looking for, and there we go. So, but is that the problem we've run into? Is that the political system is just more abundant, and people inside the apparatus have taken over?
Pretty much. I would say that Congress has demoted itself to the status of errand boy. On the one hand, you have a situation like in the House with 2-year election cycles. These people are campaigning all the time. And when you're campaigning all the time, you're fundraising. Some of these guys spend, up to 40% of their work week just dialing for dollars or going to fundraisers, essentially begging rich people and corporations for money. Now, that's time they could have spent governing, learning the issues, learning the location on a map of the next country we're going to invade, this sort of thing, maybe asking critical questions and doing oversight as they're supposed to do in committees. But they're not doing that. They're raising money. And in so doing, they're becoming beholden to those interests. Even when they're asked to do their job, sometimes they don't do it. There's been a authorization for the use of force bill that's been pending for over a year regarding ISIS. Congress doesn't want to touch it because they don't want their fingerprints on anything that could go wrong. So they're basically abrogating their Article I powers under the Constitution to declare war.
Which is a really interesting situation, because as much as Congress tends to criticize the president for overreaching here, he's asking them to do their part of the equation in a declaration of war, the authorization of the use of force against ISIS, and they're not doing it.
Right. I mean, we've been bombarded over the last day or two with sound bites from members of Congress saying that Obama is a dictator because of an executive order on gun checks and who gets to sell guns and what things they must disclose. But you don't hear them talking about, well, we have to do this authorization of the use of force, something that's clearly outlined in the Constitution, because they're essentially too cowardly to do so. They don't want the outcome to be something that could go wrong and reflect badly on them.
Mike Lofgren's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. So, Mike, what are the components of the deep state? What makes up the pieces of it?
Well, it's the government, but not all the government. Agencies like the Centers for Disease Control and the others simply do their job, or they inspect meat or drugs or whatever. What I'm talking about are the national security components and those having control over finances. The Pentagon, the Treasury, DHS, the CIA, of course. They have become incredibly entrenched. They have incredibly powerful bureaucracies, and they are connected to the broader sort of state within the state, which are the private interests in the military-industrial complex, Wall Street, and now increasingly Silicon Valley, because the National Security Agency can't do the things it claims it wants to do without the wholehearted cooperation of Silicon Valley, both in terms of the technology they use and the communications backbones they tap into. They need assistance to do that.
So has the military-industrial complex morphed into a military-industrial technological complex?
You could say that. Add Wall Street into the mix, and you've pretty much got the major players.
You write that it's not so much a conspiracy that there's a deep state, but an evolution. So an evolution from what to what?
Well, to be sure, there's always going to be a tug of war in this society or any society. It's been this way since the founding of the country. A tug of war between rich interests and the rest of the population. Sometimes it gets out of control, like the Gilded Age. But that was followed by an age of reform. The pendulum swings back and forth. What we have currently is so entrenched, I think, because the element of secrecy, and this may have started in World War II, because you had these enormous operations going, the Manhattan Project, the cryptanalysis to decode the German and Japanese war codes that involved tens of thousands of people all over the country working in absolute secrecy. For instance, the cryptanalysis, that wasn't revealed for decades after the war. The atom bomb project was totally off Congress's radar screen. Marine. They didn't think that they appropriated money for that. Nobody had any idea what was going on. Truman didn't know as vice president until he was briefed after Roosevelt died and he got into the Oval Office. And yet there was this huge infrastructure with secret cities like Hanford, Washington, and Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, that wasn't demobilized when the war ended. It became a institutionalized and entrenched part of the nation, and it became kind of the nucleus for this secret and rather unaccountable system. And, of course, in the post-war era, you added the CIA and the NSA, and there's very little congressional oversight being exercised on them. There was an article in the Washington Post about a week ago saying that Congress put a provision in law regarding the CIA that they should report certain things about their personnel, and CIA isn't complying. So essentially, if they are no longer under the control of Congress, they are unaccountable. They are a rogue operation.
So I can see the evolution here, then, and things that started out with a certain wartime need, a need for secrecy and rapid operation, became institutionalized, and nobody ever thought, well, we should put these on the books now and make sure that there's legislation that supports them.
Right, and, you know, you might say, well, that has to do with military secrets and so forth. What's that got to do with Wall Street? It's funny how our trade bills are negotiated in such secrecy that members of Congress don't have access to them. They can only go downtown and look at the thing in a sealed room with no electronic devices on them and cannot take notes. And yet the lobbyists know all about them. The corporate interests are part of the team negotiating it. I mean, how accountable is that? Congress passed a bill barring mandatory labeling of origin, a place of origin, for meat now, because Mexico and Canada sued under the World Trade Organization agreements that this was illegal. Apparently, consumer knowledge about the place of origin of a product they buy is no longer any of their business.
Mike Lofgren is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is called The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Paul in Grants Pass, welcome back to the Exchange.
Good morning. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. I've been doing a considerable amount of research on this over the last decade, and I look forward to reading your book, sir.
Comments. Thank you.
Comments, first of all. What we're seeing, it's often perceived as a pendulum swing, but what we're really seeing is we're seeing the inevitable result of capitalism and a quote-unquote free market society. Whether you call it an oligarchy or whether you call it essentially the way I do, that we have in fact created a fascist state with the trappings of a republic, that's where we are. And the swings to the left, occasional populist activities, things like that, are minor aberrations in the entire process. Roosevelt and the New Deal was an aberration. Kennedy was an aberration in the Kennedy administration. The rest has been a steady march towards the producers controlling the government. And I think you'll agree that you see that with captured agencies and so on and so forth over time. My question has to do with the truly unaccountable programs that are in the government, both in the private sector where they're receiving money, and in the public sector with governmental entities. Alan Dulles, as near as I can tell, played the American government as a free agent in his entire career in government. And I'll take my responses to that off the air.
All right. Thank you for that, Paul. Appreciate that. Thoughts, Mike?
Well, he's certainly right about Alan Dulles. He was one of the geniuses behind overthrowing Mossadegh in Iran, and that really worked out well.
Oh, boy.
He overthrew Arbenz in, of course, I'm being sarcastic.
Right.
He overthrew Arbenz in Guatemala in 54, and we've had nothing but strife, death squads, and so forth in Central America ever since. So he's certainly one of the architects of the deep state, I would say. And sure, it's a natural evolution, and Adam Smith himself said so, that when a bunch of merchants get together, the conversation will inevitably drift towards some conspiracy in the restraint of trade or otherwise against the public. So, yeah, that's the natural thing. And what's necessary is to have a government restrain it. I'm all for the free market system under rules, but they do not want to adhere to rules. They want their own little monopoly franchises, and they'll pay politicians to get it. That's why there are provisions in the Internal Revenue Code that tax hedge fund managers on their outrageous compensation at lower rates than a fireman or a policeman or a nurse would pay. So they paid for it. They bought the politicians. They get the benefit.
The book is called The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. Mike Lofgren is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Mike, your analysis suggests, particularly as you track the similarities in policy, particularly in security and military between administrations, particularly the last two, that it's not like the president really has a lot to say about what goes on with the deep state.
Well, we saw that with Obama. Here was a guy who campaigned against the Iraq War. He campaigned against internal surveillance. He said that he was going to filibuster any amendment that would grant retroactive immunity to the telecommunications companies that broke the law in cooperating with the NSA on internal surveillance. Lo and behold, just before he was coronated in Denver in 2008 and became the nominee, there was a vote, the FISA Amendments Act, that would grant that retroactive immunity, and he voted for it. It could have had something to do with the fact that a man named John Brennan, who worked at the CIA at a senior level for the Bush administration, left the CIA, went to the private sector, and ended up as a foreign policy advisor to candidate Obama in 2008. So that shows how these people tend to be surrounded and assimilated into a sort of groupthink.
So to the point that you make about the Constitution, then, I mean, these certainly sound like extra constitutional structures. I mean, who would or could challenge them on that basis?
Well, there's 9 people on the Supreme Court, and if they refuse to hear a case, then nothing happens. So, and the thing is that on national security issues, we have something called the state secrets privilege, and it's a totally made-up fraudulent principle, because it goes back to, I think the year was 1952 or 53, there was a plane crash of an Air Force B-29, and the next of kin were concerned about it, wanted to know the details. Was it because of manufacturing defects in the aircraft? And the government said it was a secret mission, can't tell you anything about it, and so forth. And the there was a suit that went up to the Supreme Court, and the court basically ruled that, well, we can't be the judge of that. If they think that it's secret, and therefore the case is dismissed. And for the next 60 years, they have used the state secrets privilege as a way of preventing cases to get to court. And the thing is, it's made up, because...
More sobering discussions with Mike Lofgren about the deep state, the fall of the Constitution, and the rise of a shadow government. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. This is our final segment with Mike Lofgren, the author of The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution, and the Rise of a Shadow Government. Some sobering thoughts about the immutability of the federal government to change from the political end of things, because the bureaucracy and the workings inside are so well entrenched that they tend to resist input, as he tells us. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Mike, a two-part question about your nearly three decades working as a congressional staffer. Part one, were you privy to the so-called black budgets for things like the CIA? Two, what were the things that led you to conclude that there is a deep state?
Well, yes, I was privy to it, not everything. And in later years, I simply avoided it, because nothing good can come from knowing it, and I didn't need it anyway. I didn't need to look at classified information to tell me that the Iraq invasion was basically just a pretext to invade Iraq, because the House of Saddam Hussein and the House of Bush were hereditary enemies, and they used any pretext they could think of. What was the second part of your question?
What were the key events that led you to see a deep state?
Well, it's precisely that period between 9/11 and the invasion of Iraq that it seemed to me that those who wanted to do it used fear to stampede people into supporting the invasion, and certainly to panic Congress into rubber stamping an authorization of the use of force. And very peculiarly, usually when you have a declaration of war or its equivalent, you're right on the verge of fighting a country, or maybe the shots have already been fired. It was 5 months between the authorization and the invasion. The Bush administration very cleverly timed it just before the midterm elections in 2002, ramped up the fear factor, propagandized people over the media so that they'd want their member of Congress to vote to invade. It was a really dirty operation. And I saw the same thing in 2008 in a different context, the financial meltdown. The people from Treasury and the Fed basically were telling Congress, if you don't do this now, we won't have an economy tomorrow. What this was a pretty much strings-free bailout of the banks rather than any other method.
We have a call here from Vajra in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Lofgren.
Good morning. What a wonderful book. What a really important delineation of how this evolved and is not a conspiracy. I'm finding a parallel between Daniel Ellsberg, the whistleblower back in the Vietnam War who came out with the Pentagon Papers and exposed that four consecutive presidents were lying to us about our why we were in Vietnam. And and he was finally exonerated because they found that his phones had been tapped. But and he exposed this to the American public, Pentagon Papers, and it exposed Nixon most of all. And then the American people turned around and reelected Nixon. And nobody listens to this. And it's the same thing when you're talking about all this is going on, and nobody is listening or doing anything about it in the American public to an extent that we can actually turn this around. So what do you propose we do? How can this be? Because Ellsberg talked about how thousands of people were complicit with all of the lies and the deceit. And he was, too, until he realized his conscience wouldn't let him do that anymore. How do we turn this around, this glommed together lying complicity that's going on in the shadow government?
Excellent question. Thanks for that, Vajra. Mike?
Well, certainly before any political action can take place, people simply have to educate themselves and inform themselves about what their government is doing. It's a complex thing, but I would hope people were interested in things like what are the components of the federal budget? Where does that money go to? When we're spending all this money for government, how much of it trickles down to contractors? This kind of thing. It's a complex story. And as for the commercial media, too many of them, it doesn't bleed, so it doesn't lead. You can't sell cornflakes and Budweiser by a complex story of following the money as much as you can by asking who deflated the football in the New England Patriots game or what the Kardashians are up to. So partly it's a matter of self-energizing by the public to become informed, and then any reforms and meaningful action can take place. We have one of the lower voter participation rates of any Western democracy. So that doesn't help.
That does tend to go up, though, in years like this one, when we will have a presidential election. Do you see some hope that the issues you raise, and in fact, is the book timed to become an issue in the campaign?
Well, it's just fortuitous, because 6 months ago, I wouldn't think we would be where we are. And certainly, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are hardly equivalent politicians, but they do have one thing in common. They're upsetting the business model of the permanent campaign and of rich donors. Trump's so rich, he doesn't need it. Sanders is getting a lot of thousands and thousands of self-energized people who give small donations, like I think the average is $33 a piece or something like that. So he's totally upended the business model that Hillary Clinton is using to get elected, and in truth, most other people use to get elected. So I have no idea where this will end, but it's certainly interesting to watch how both parties, their establishments, are panicking over this.
So if the parties have become as dysfunctional as you said in your previous book, and if money in politics is a big issue, then is one of the answers for dismantling the deep state ultimately to get the money out of politics?
There's all kinds of reforms to Wall Street or the Pentagon that you can think of, but they're not going to be enacted unless and until you get the money out of politics. Then the incentives of our elected officials will be more closely aligned with what the public wants done. I mean, how are you going to get single-payer health care? Our health care in this country costs twice as much per capita as the rest of the developed world, and the outcomes aren't any better. Well, we've got that situation because Big Pharma, the big insurance companies, paid to make sure Obamacare does not have single payer in it. That's why Obama took it off the table before the negotiations even began, which is a rookie error for a politician to make. Unless it wasn't an error at all, he knew which side his bread was buttered on. The Medicare Prescription Drug Act, passed under a Republican administration, has the same types of things. You can't negotiate bulk purchases of pharmaceuticals. It's just basically a big money machine for the pharmaceutical industry. And the reason we have those things is because politicians get paid by contributors.
So ultimately, the emergence of the deep state, certainly as it has progressed since the turn of the century, would seem to be a triumph of money overall, that the people and the organizations that would logically get regulated by the government instead have, in essence, regulated the government itself back and said, no, you can't do this. You can't regulate us any more than this.
Oh, yeah, it's called regulatory capture. It's like when part of the budget of FDA, Food and Drug Administration, is paid for by fees from the pharmaceutical industry, it does affect people's judgment and also the revolving door. If these people go to work in the pharmaceutical industry, how are they going to be a year or two before they leave? What are their decisions going to be? And it's exactly that way in the Pentagon, at the Treasury Department, DHS, and pretty much most of the departments you can think of.
How then does any political candidate raise the issues that you have raised, other than to say, go read Mike Lofgren's book? Because as you pointed out, in a society where the attention span tends to gravitate more to things like the Kardashians, how does a candidate not look like a loon or Joe McCarthy by talking about this mysterious shadow government inside the government?
Well, you know, is what I'm saying that much different from what Bernie Sanders is saying? And, you know, this is not an endorsement of his candidacy. I'm just saying, look at the traction he's gotten. And he doesn't have any powerful donors behind him, because despite apathy and or resignation on the part of a lot of people, there is a group of people, and it might be bigger than you think, that are interested in this. And people do listen to him when he talks for 45 minutes on healthcare or Wall Street regulation, because they're tired of being patronized by all this stuff about American exceptionalism and USA and we're number one and all this other nonsense that politicians use as talking points.
One of the I noticed one of the reforms that you recommend to get America back on track is to stay out of the Middle East. I mean, are we talking entirely, and is that possible?
Well, people call you an isolationist if you don't want to invade a country. You know, I'm for normal diplomatic and trade relations with other countries and tourism and all the rest of it. But there seems to be a pattern that everything we've done there has made things worse. Now, the definition of fanaticism or stupidity, maybe, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. We invaded Iraq, got rid of Saddam. That was going to solve all our problems. It only made them worse. So then in 2011, we knocked over Muammar Gaddafi. It made things worse. Now, what do you think the odds are that getting rid of Bashar al-Assad will make things better?
Well, based on that track record, not very good. Finally, Mike, is this an American problem? Do other countries have deep states from your analysis?
I would have thought that democracy was actually healthier in a number of European countries, but I'm seeing the way the EU has evolved, and with the euro crisis, that basically the opinions of the public there don't matter. That the Greek bailout, for instance, wasn't really a bailout of Greece. It was a bailout of the banks that lent to Greece. And the Greek public had no say in it. The EU Commission told them what to do.
Well, there are some real sobering thoughts in the book to be considered. The book is called The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution, and the Rise of a Shadow Government. Mike Lofgren spent nearly three decades as a congressional staffer and joined us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Mike, thanks so much.
Good to be here.